Welcome to the HMO Success Podcast. I'm your host, Wendy Whittaker-Large, and I'm here to help you create a profitable HMO portfolio. Whether you're a brand new investor or you've been at it for a number of years, my podcast is here to help you make the most from your business, whether that is starting up, scaling, or systemizing. Please hit the subscribe button to make sure you never miss an episode. And if you've got an awe-inspiring project, an inspirational investing story, or a unique approach to HMOs, I'd love to hear from you. Hello and welcome to the HMO Success Podcast. Now, this is a slightly different episode this week because obviously we've had a budget and Jeremy Hunt stood up in the House of Commons on Wednesday to announce various different changes that he was going to be making in the hope, I suppose, of reviving the UK economy. So this morning, what I'd like to do is to just have a discussion about this with my better half, Andy, who's very interested in economics, studied economics at school and has carried on studying economics ever since then, and is particularly interested in the link between the world situation, the UK situation, with, of course, what we do as local investors, buying property, turning them into HMOs and renting them out to people who need them. So welcome to the podcast, Andy.
Thank you, Wendy.
So really, this is an opportunity for us to kind of pull apart Jeremy Hunt's latest budget to discuss really whether this is going to do the Conservatives any good at all in the upcoming election, whether that's going to be May or later on in the year, and also to think about the impact this is going to have on HMO investors. So I'd like to really start with some of the key takeaways which are going to affect the HMO market. What do you see those as being?
It's probably the tax on vaping, I would imagine. That's going to hit the HMO dweller very hard.
Yeah, I'm not thinking about the HMO dweller. I'm thinking about the HMO investor. Although the stress that some of these changes might bring into people's lives, you can understand why they might turn to vaping. But I don't think that's really going to be the headline figure there.
Okay, so I'm sorry for the slightly jokey start. So, Wendy, I think there are a number of pieces in this budget. When you take a stand back look at it, it's a little bit hard to figure out what it's trying to achieve. My view, and it accords with many economists, is that the UK is in something of a black hole. You could call it a silent depression, actually. I think we've had virtually no real-time GDP growth for many, many years, actually. We've flatlined when you take away inflation, particularly housing inflation. It's all just, we're going nowhere. So if a logical person was sitting in the seat in number 11, like Jeremy Hunt is this year, that logical person would surely be trying to boost growth. But I don't see any particularly growth-inducing measures in this budget. In fact, all I see is more regulation and a whole load of tinkering. Where would you like to start in discussing the tinkering?
Well, I think the first thing is, let's focus on the real important element that if you like, you could call it the elephant in the room, which is the impact on serviced accommodation. I think for those of us in the property industry, there were, of course, some other property related announcements, which we'll come on to. But for me, this was the biggie. Now, I've been looking a little bit on social media today to see people's reactions. And you can see that this is starting to cause some tremors because people are recognizing if they've run a serviced accommodation business as an alternative, for example, to HMOs, that now they are going to be effectively faced with the same taxation regime that we have been faced with for the last 8 years, and they're now going to have their own version of Section 24. What do you say about that?
I think you're exactly right, and I think it's, in some ways it's more pernicious, because from my understanding at the moment, the regime is not tapered. I think it starts with, you know, next April, it's changeover. You're now subject to the same regime that, as you say, we've faced for 8 years or so, but there was a much staggered start to give people time to adjust their businesses. I don't think that's happening. And, you know, we could go on and talk about what the impact of this is going to be. I'm actually fascinated to see how HMRC would justify this, because my understanding previously, when we talked about this, not on a podcast, but just between you and I, that we looked and seen that HMRC, because they classed our kind of business, so classic AST, assured short hold tenancy style property business, as an investment. Well, so that the tax regime was set up to say, well, it's an investment, so you're not, so this is a tax relief, if you like, that is now being withdrawn. Well, the distinction was drawn that serviced accommodation was not an investment, probably because some, I think, wrong assumption that serviced accommodation required more effort, more manual labour. I can kind of understand that. As I said, I don't think it's true necessarily. It's a big assumption, but you can see where that comes from. So, and so therefore, that is a business rather than
a trading business.
There you are, a trading business. Well, apparently, next April, those effort levels must be going way down. And now, suddenly, it's an investment business. And it makes you realise how callous and how careless, actually, HMRC can be in drawing what I would call distinctions without differences all over the map just to change their projected tax take.
And also to appease certain sectors, for example, Cornwall, Norfolk, other parts of the UK which have suffered, or they claim to have suffered, from oversupply of Airbnb type accommodation, short-term lets, to the detriment of their local sort of inhabitants who now can't get long-term rental accommodation.
And you can see their point of view, can't you? You can see that the locals there would have that idea that they've been priced out of the market by investors who are up from London, only stay in the accommodation, I don't know, 6 weeks of the year or whatever, and then that accommodation is locked up and not available for local people. Of course, what unfortunately very few people realise is that given time, the free market solves this problem. If that community truly becomes desolate, with no local goods and services because of this issue that nobody can live there anymore, well, these people who live in London will unload their investment, won't they? And they'll move on. But of course, we live in an impatient society where people expect politicians to be like sort of some kind of Apollo figure, or, you know, a typical central planner, that they can click their fingers, wave their wand, and solve these problems. And of course, maybe it will look like that for a few years, but then fairly soon we'll begin to realise what the downsides, concomitant impacts from this tax change will be. What are the moral hazards that are getting set up? How many genuine holiday businesses won't get set up anymore? We don't know, because you've just, the Chancellor of the Exchequer has just scared off another bunch of people who might have made investments, who will think, no, I won't do that anymore. Instead of that, I'll just sit back and wait for my pension. Again, growth will be affected.
Well, I think what we might see even is the results of Section 24 on the private rental sector, which is what landlords had warned the government about for years and years and years, that rents will go up. And the government didn't believe the PRS. They didn't believe those soothsayers who said, this is what's going to happen. And that's exactly what's happened. And now we have rents at an all-time high. We have a lack of stock to rent. We have all sorts of problems in the rental market, coupled, of course, with very, very high immigration, which has exacerbated the problem. But it's very likely that in the service accommodation market, you try and book a holiday in Cornwall in 2 years' time, and you'll probably find that what you were paying this year for a week in Perranporth is going to be double or triple.
Yeah, that's right. And so what may very well happen, I don't know, because I can't predict the future any more than anybody else. But what very well may happen is that many of those holidays will now not be affordable. So to take the example of Perrenporth, people who go, yeah, no, I won't go to Perrenporth anymore. Tell you what, I'll go to Magaluf instead. So what's going to happen to Perrenporth? Well, maybe the economy goes down. And those people who've been complaining so vociferously about not being able to access a house, well, guess what? It doesn't matter anymore because you won't have any money because you haven't got a job. So you've got to be careful what you wish for in this life. And, well, those same individuals will now be expecting the government to solve the next problem with a handout. And, of course, the government will. And what is this called? This is called recession, the silent depression. This is when governments sooner or later we're going to realise that you cannot centrally plan economies like this. When will they learn, Wendy?
Well, okay, I understand that you're getting a little bit of a soapbox here, but I still want us to bring us back to the elements of the announcement.
Or must we?
So, yes. Let's think about how this impacts the HMO market. One of the thoughts I had was, because service accommodation is now going to be on a very, very similar footing to HMOs, will this mean that a lot of SA operators are going to say, well, in order to keep my income and in order to keep my property, I'm actually now going to move into an HMO model, particularly when you think further down the line of the Renters Reform Bill, which is proposing the abolition of ASTs. Obviously, the headline has been the abolishing of Section 21, but actually it's the AST that's going to be abolished. And in its place, you're going to have this two-month kind of tenancy agreement. So that's coming down the line. And you've also now, for those people who are running service accommodation, realizing they're going to have to be on a license database, and they're going to have to possibly apply for planning permission for new SA units, and they might be saying, do you know what, the HMO model, it's tried and tested, we know it works, we'll move to that kind of model. Is it going to, do you think, mean that people who've got SAs are going to transfer into that kind of market?
It's very likely that that's got to be a possibility. Well, I think we can say this, some will, some won't. Some will sell off, some will try and hack it out without changing their business model entirely. Some will incorporate, some will move over to HMO. There's going to be a whole variety of approaches from this. It could lead to more HMOs. It's going to be very interesting to see, I think. The interesting thing, you have to consider that the buildings don't change. The same building is sitting there.
Although there may be slightly higher requirements for safety. In an HMO, you've got higher requirements in terms of housing standards because it's deemed to be residential accommodation.
Yeah, this is going to be the interesting thing to see how effectively and cheaply or expensively the average SA operator is going to find it to bridge over into HMO. In many cases, it might be very, very difficult. I mean, the other thing is room sizes, of course, shared space. One could hazard a guess and say that many of these SA units are not going to meet those kind of requirements, not without quite a lot of internal adjustment. And then, I mean, as I said earlier on, my question would then be, the government has just screwed over another set of business people. Are those same business people going to take the chance that says, okay, I'll now reformat into an HMO model? I don't know. I think at some point you start to lose people. The hardy property owner will make the best of this, I suspect, and probably some will fall by the wayside. Incorporation, if I stand back and think about it, I suspect incorporation is going to be the main train that people are going to try and get on board. But the difficulty, of course, is that if you've got a mortgage, how are you now going to port that mortgage across inside a limited company? Some companies, some banks, finance houses might be fine with that, Well, there's less so. It's kind of hard, isn't it? We're trying to be the treasury here, HM Treasury, and guess, okay, what are going to be the knock-on impacts? And the answer is you just don't know. Probably different based on area as well.
That's true. So I think there's obviously a lot of unknowns in that particular announcement. And I could imagine that has really sort of shocked people who are doing serviced accommodation. There are a couple of other things that we should also touch on, though, that clearly relate to HMOs. First one is stamp duty for multiple dwellings relief. Now, a lot of the media said, "Oh, the Chancellor's getting rid of stamp duty," and I think, "Oh, if only." No. It's not getting rid of stamp duty per se. It's multiple dwellings relief. So this is a situation where you might have a building which has, let's say, three or four flats in it, and because you've got two or more, you can claim multiple dwellings relief, which is a calculation that you can go online and do, and it determines whether you'd actually make any savings by claiming multiple dwellings relief, because it's about a median calculation on the two stamp duty levels that you would have ordinarily made, and you can effectively get the average of the two buildings rather than having to pay one and then another one. If you go on the government website, it will probably explain it much more clearly than I have. However, that multiple dwellings relief is, of course, incredibly useful, because when you are buying, let's say, a block of flats, or you're buying a property that might have a couple of other dwellings on the land, it has enabled property purchasers to save money on stamp duty, to buy what are generally unusual buildings. Maybe, for example, a block of flats. We bought a block of flats in Crewe a couple of years ago and we didn't get multiple dwellings relief because there was also a lease on the land at the back. So, in fact, I applied for mixed use stamp duty relief, because our solicitor had applied for multiple dwellings relief, and actually I realised that he had failed in recognising that the lease turned it into mixed use commercial, and he didn't therefore apply the higher banding that you get with commercial property. So this is where, of course, you as a property investor need to be aware of all these different factors that affect the income, that affect your tax, that affect the value of your capital, that affect your cash flow. It's a complex business these days, buying and selling property, and it's so important to be ahead of the game. But that's a change that the Chancellor is bringing in. And another one, of course, is the reduction of capital gains tax for residential property. And of course, it's, you know, some people say, oh, you know, it's not fair that capital gains tax on the disposal of a property is being reduced. This, of course, affects you if you own property in your own name. And it's only for it's only being reduced by 4% from 28% to 24%. What we have to remember is, of course, the bigger factor, which the government changed 2 years ago, is the capital gains tax allowance. Up until last April 2023, it was £12,000. Now it's down to £6,000. And in fact, I think it's being reduced to £3,000 by April 2025. So it's cold comfort that the percentage on that gain is now being reduced in terms of your tax bill, because your actual allowance has also been massively reduced. So although you're paying a little bit less on the taxable gain, what would have been the biggest help has actually been cut and cut and cut and cut, and no one has raised that as a sort of contrast, if you like, to the reduction of capital gains tax.
I can't help but agree with you on that one, Wendy. It was, as I said at the start of this chat, it's tinkering, isn't it? It's giving with one hand, taking away with another. I asked myself, what's the point? Other than narcissism and ego, what was the point? I can't discern any.
Well, we can perhaps talk about that on a wider level. Now, a couple of other things just to mention. which I'm sure that you've read about if you're interested in this, if you've heard about this. National insurance is being cut by 2p in the pound for employees and the self-employed. So that might affect you if you have another business or if you are paying national insurance. Salary thresholds at which people start paying income tax and national insurance remain frozen, though. So this is what's called fiscal drag. And this is where, because of incomes rising, but those thresholds at which you start paying income tax at the lower rate or the higher rate are frozen, because of that drip, drip, drip of inflation, which causes wages to go up and incomes to go up, and of course rents have gone up hugely, your tax that you're paying to the government will effectively rise. That hasn't changed at all. So yes, they're tinkering at the edges with reducing the national insurance, and there are sort of rumours that the government wants to get rid of national insurance altogether because it's just this separate tax which seems to be almost irrelevant.
Well, it's interesting to note that George Osborne, I think, said the same thing 15 years ago. This is naive to think that you can get rid of NI that easily, and I don't believe that for a second, but I'd be very surprised if they can get rid of NI.
So I think in terms of the impacts on us as investors, you listening today as an HMO investor, I think looking at the wider picture, one of the things we have to recognise is there's still a massive, massive demand for housing. Immigration is... I every time I comment, I say it's at an all-time high. It's at an all-time high. It always seems to be an all-time high. And the previous time when I spoke about it, I thought that would be the all-time high. But in fact, it's continued to go up. And what did you say the other day? Are the figures for last year's total immigration?
I think they revised them upwards, didn't they? I think we're now easily into the million-plus territory, maybe 1.2, 1.3 million. Which is really depressing when you consider that GDP has gone basically sideways. And then, so you have to look at GDP per capita is actually probably going down.
And this is, of course, why we have a government who are pretty desperate to take from people who are obviously making money, being successful, providing into the economy, such as service accommodation providers who are, you know, have properties in nice parts of the UK where people want to go on holiday and are probably making quite a lot of nice juicy profits. But unfortunately, by hampering those people, they will be hampering many other people in that local economy. And yeah, as you said earlier, we'll wait and see the impacts of that.
But the problem that hasn't been grasped in this budget, and I'm not this is not an original thought, lots of commentators are saying it and it's true, the elephant in the room is the debt burden. I mean, on the BBC it's fascinating to see that they're listing it as only our national debt, public debt, is currently 92% of GDP. I don't think that's true. I've seen many measures that show it's over 100% of GDP. I think in absolute terms we're around about 2.6 trillion, and I don't think that includes any council debts or other associated stuff like that. So we're really, really into danger levels here, and the areas where many commentators would say you're stultifying the economy, you're setting the economy in concrete by having this kind of debt load. The problem for the government is that they are having to finance at much higher interest rates than would have been forecast, say, 10 years ago. There are really only two ways out of this. A productivity miracle, whereby you'd be having sort of 6, 7% real terms GDP growth per year, or just inflation. Inflate it away, drop the value of the pound, reduce the purchasing power value of the pound, and then the real terms value of the debt drops as well. What I see in the budget so far is that they are basically silently selecting that second approach. That I'm also then describing an environment with lots of price inflation in it, and probably property price inflation is a component part of that as well, which actually, as a stand-back view, makes property investment very attractive, as long as you can hold on to the income that you're making and the capital gains that you're making. That's what the government, I suspect, are going to make it progressively more difficult to do. So that's worth focusing on.
Well, I think that actually ends on a fairly positive note, despite the doom and gloom, despite the fact that we are working in a, you could almost say, a stagflationary environment where you have stagnant growth, but you still have inflation, even though the government are hopeful that inflation is going to come under control this year and go down to maybe 2%. Let's see. Let's see if that's absolutely true. The fact is that even if inflation does lower this year, we've still got an awful lot of compound effect of previous years of inflation still making their way through the system.
Prices are not really going to go backwards. I mean, they're still sticky as to where they are in very many cases.
And of course, that's true of property prices as well. We might see them fluctuate a little bit, but generally, although property prices can go down, as we've seen at various significant historical events, such as the crash of 2008 or the early 1990s when we were in recession, generally, they tend to bounce back fairly quickly and then they rise higher than their previous highs. So, I think that on the whole, investing in HMOs, investing in property is still a great way to build your wealth, to create capital. And as you say, I think if you can keep an eye on the cash flow and make sure that the property not only washes its face, but gives you some good income that is profitable, and that you can find ways of ensuring that you keep that profit as much as you possibly can, then it's a very, very sound business model. And it will work for many, many years, particularly because we have so much incredible demand at the moment. So I think overall, although Jeremy Hunt's budget is not one to get excited about, and sad to say the polls are reflecting that in terms of the views of people and what they're predicting is going to be the outcome of the next general election, I think as property investors, we've still got an awful lot of reason to be extremely quietly positive.
Yes, I agree.
Thank you very much, Andy.
Thanks, Wendy.
Thank you for listening to the HMO Success Podcast. If you'd like to know more about how you can create a profitable HMO business, please visit our website, hmosuccess.co.uk, to find out more. We have plenty of free tools and information for you there, and also on our Facebook group, The Ultimate HMO Success System. We look forward to connecting with you very soon. Thanks for listening.